won't even come close to doing this perfectly, which is why there's this thing called sacrifice, and ultimately the once-for-all sacrifice. But you are holy, so now look like it. Act that way. Live in a manner worthy of the calling with which you've been called. Okay, so that you could go that way with this text. But in Matthew, and where it sits now in its context, I wonder if Jesus is using this for second use of the law. See? Just because the text before it, it's, once again, they thrust, he parries, and then thrust. See, so the real point of the text before it is not, let's have a discussion about church and state, but it's rather sort of an indirect attack, rhetorically indirect attack on Jesus, that the religious leaders are not giving to God the things that are God because they're opposing Jesus. See? And he does the same thing in the text that follows because he says, whose son is Christ? And they say, David's. He said, well, then he poses them a conundrum. He says, well, how come David calls him Lord? See? What he wants them to say is that the Messiah is not only son of David, but that he's the son of God. But this they will not say. So I actually wonder if this is a second use of the law here, and Jesus is trying to, again, because he ratchets it up. They ask about the law. He tells them this is the law and the prophets. See? They're all gathered together in opposition, testing him. And I wonder if his purpose is simply to crush them, you know, an attempt to say, you want to know about the will of God? You think you're doing the will of God? I'll tell you the will of God. See? So I think you could go either way. You know, you could make it Christian third use of the law in light of who Christ is and who we are in Christ. Or you could use it to attack some sort of carnal security, you know, any thought that, and I actually think, again, in context, because he's not talking to Christians here, you know. These are people who hate him, who are opposing him, who are trying to destroy him. Right? Now, once again, as I said before, you got to be real careful if you're going to preach that kind of a text to a Christian congregation, you know, on the assumption that they are baptized, that they came to church because they believe in Jesus. You know, you don't want to just go ripping into them as if they were, you know, exactly the same people as these Pharisees are. Nevertheless, we can artfully expose through the law that even in our lives as Christians, there are times and ways in which we get to feeling smug about our performance and how we think we're kind of doing just fine on the basis of what we have done. See, so if you're going to go that way, you got to be artful about it and careful that you don't simply say things that aren't true to the baptized Adah congregation, the Kahal of God. So, yeah, please.
It's just that, of course, this conversation or dialogue that happens is that I get the feeling that I look at these Pharisees as like the confirmands from hell.
The confirmands from hell. Let's see. Tell me more. What do you mean by that? Yeah, well, that's just it. I mean, even didaskala is ironic. By the way, I forgot to mention that. The disciples of Jesus in Matthew never call him didaskalos. Never. Only kurios. So in Matthew's literary context, the very fact that they call him teacher means that they don't understand who he is. That's it. I'm glad you mentioned. I forgot to say that. Yeah. Surely. Yeah. And they've called him that before, right? In verse 16 of chapter 22. Didaskala, teacher, we know that you are true. Play the violin music. And the way of God in truth you teach. And you don't care about what anybody thinks, right? See this. They're using it in a formally appropriate way. But they don't really think he's the teacher sent from God. Otherwise they wouldn't be doing what they're doing. Exactly, exactly. So see, once again, you know, in context, this text takes on a particular cast, a particular hue, and then the challenge becomes how to preach this to a Christian congregation. Now, if you were talking to a high school baccalaureate or something and never wanted to be invited back, then it'd be real clear what to do, you know. Yeah, Mark?
What are they trying to catch? So they ask about what law is great.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the common opinion is probably right. I certainly don't have any better idea that they're trying to draw him into their debates, you know, about which is the greatest commandment. You know, they're focused on the law, and they have the list of 613, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And apparently there's some evidence that, you know, this was a thing to be discussed. Is there one commandment which is greater than the others? And if it is, which is it? So they're trying to draw him in so that he can become vulnerable to attack. In the same way that they tried to draw him in with, shall we pay taxes to Caesar? Because if he says yes, then the zealots hate him. If he says no, the authorities are suspicious. Right? So they're trying to draw him in, and you see he simply refuses to be drawn into their game. Right? He doesn't quote any of the ten. He quotes the Shema, right, which is the central confession of Israel's faith. And then he says, this isn't just the law, it's the whole revelation of God. Buddy. I mean, that's kind of what he's doing here. Yeah. Oh, time to stop. Class starts in 20 seconds or something. All right. Good. Thank you.